Now, HomePods Destroy.
Hello and welcome to HomePods Destroy, a Star Trek discussion podcast. I'm Terry and I am delighted to say that I am joined by Graham.
Hello.
And by Derek.
Hello.
Well, gents, it seems like ages since we were last together.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's because it has been ages. In our peak, we were doing one of these, like maybe one or two every 3 weeks or something like that, we were doing them. Since COVID happened, it's kind of, we've hardly done any. Let's face it, 2020, we hardly did any. We've done a few, but not much. And the reason for this is because this, of all of the podcasts that I do, and I'm pretty certain with Graham as well, and indeed Derek, this is the one where we've always made a point of doing it face-to-face, socially. And of course, we can't do that because of the dread Lurgy, the COVID, the invisible enemy that stalks us like an extremely low-budget creature in a third season episode of Star Trek, the original series. Only this one is real and it's particularly nasty. But a vaccine is on the way. And soon we are thinking about returning to normal times. Dr. McCoy is in his lab. He's synthesizing it as we speak. There was a setback. The first lot, he made the mistake of being able to make it ingestible through the mouth and mixable with scotch. And then it mysteriously went missing. The entire consignment went missing and he had to do a whole new batch. In not unrelated news, Chief Engineer Montgomery Scott was signed off work for 4 days sick. I have no idea why. While we wait for the vaccine, we will do our best to try and produce some high quality Star Trek poddage over the internet until we're back together again. And we're going to begin not with an episode of the original series, which is our usual thing, but with an entire season of Star Trek, the one that we've just finished watching. It is, of course, Star Trek Discovery Series 3, which we've all finished up about a week ago. Tremendous fun. And I think what we'll do is we'll start at the beginning because I think that that's an important place to start because it's when the actual series started. But more pertinently, it gave us an incredibly strong start. Graham, I think that this was a necessary strong start to the series to give us the momentum to see us all the way through. Do you agree?
Yeah, certainly. Obviously, where it left off at season two, everything was open for them, wasn't it, really? They'd broken through to the other side, to the 31st century. And yeah, so we didn't know what to expect. And really, they had a free hand to do whatever they like with it. And of course, you want to still keep it Trek, so you want to keep things familiar, and you want to have things that Trek fans can hold on to and say, yeah, this is familiar, I like this, this is Star Trek in a different universe. Not technically in a different universe, but you know what I mean. And so those first couple of episodes had to reassure us that, yeah, you're still watching Star Trek, we haven't just taken an excuse just to go completely on a different tangent sci-fi wise. And I think it worked. They worked really well, and they set up the whole of the season really well. And for me, it was just the one thing I was not most happy about was the fact that it was only 13 episodes.
Interesting. Yeah, I have to say that I can go into this a little bit later, I guess, but now, my feeling was maybe it kind of got a bit baggy, sort of like mid season. Every episode I enjoyed, there's no question about that. I don't think there are any stinkers. We might have a quick chat about the sort of like mid season two parter because I know we've got some strong opinions about that. But what I'll just go to Derek, just again, Derek, on the start of the season. I think the thing that do you think that there was some wisdom in them featuring some very, very visibly recognizable Star Trek alien species that go all the way back almost to the beginning of the franchise? You've got the Orions, who were in the first ever episode of Star Trek, albeit they're not the first to be transmitted. And of course, you've got the Andorians as well. You see, I don't actually know the name of Morn's aliens, but you see basically baby Morns in there. With everything else being quite different about it, we had that familiarity to ground us in there. Do you think that was a deliberate decision that they took?
I actually thought that it was probably a decision that was taken when they did Picard, because when we had Picard the year before, we were focusing in more the sort of like the next generation characters, you know, or species as well. And for me, when I first saw the trailer to this, I was thinking, when I saw the Morn character, Morn species character, I thought, they're starting to put in sort of like Deep Space Nine characters that they haven't used for a while. And I was thinking, oh, maybe they'll start looking at, you know, maybe this will have a bit of a kinship to Deep Space Nine. Thankfully, because it didn't actually happen, because it went off in a slightly different direction. And in the end, I think that it sort of held up traditional TOS Star Trek is what I felt that it had more relationship, at least at the end of the series. At the beginning of the series, I was a bit worried in case we were going to go on Andromeda. Because the storyline originally was very similar to Andromeda. And I was thinking Kevin Sorbo is going to sort of pop up any minute now. Maybe he was going to be one of the person who's in charge of all the sort of merchants, but thankfully not.
Yeah, it might have been a nice touch if Kevin Sorbo had turned up as a cameo, just as a kind of nod to the fact that, we get that you're worried that this could have gone Andromeda. But who needs him and his ultra right wing views? Morn is, of course, to all of our listeners who already know this and are yelling at the speaker saying, "You idiots!" He's a Lurian, of course, and indeed he was a courier, and so it kind of makes sense, because obviously there were lots of couriers. Couriers was a thing in this series and in this episode, and so it was Lurian characters, and it was just nice to see them running around and being energetic rather than just sitting at a bar stool, you know, hampered by incredibly unwieldy makeup from the 1990s. So I quite enjoyed that. Can I ask, please, for your opinions about Michael Burnham in this episode? I think I've said this before. I thought Michael has in the past, Sonequa Martin-Green, I think, has struggled with the burden of this character because an awful lot is placed on her. And it was quite nice to see her, high, frankly, for a short while, and just to see some humor and some lightness of touch. I thought that I liked what they did with Michael, certainly for the first half of this series. Can I get an echo of that sentiment or a disagreement?
No, I think you're right. And I was saddened to see her reverting to type come the end of it and just become annoying Michael again right at the very end. Oh God, here she goes being annoying. Stop it. Stop being annoying. Why are you being annoying? You used to be cool. What happened to you?
This is the thing, because, I mean, friend of the pod and one-time guest star on the pod, Zoe, my wife, does not like Michael Burnham at all. And we watched the first episode of Discovery, and she said it's taken them two bloody seasons, but they finally created an episode of Star Trek, which is really odd because, you know, in many ways it wasn't. But I think, Derek, your TOS thing is on the money there, because it's kind of, for me, had that old school first season TOS kind of thing going on there. Not just the familiar aliens, but that kind of slightly out on the edge, you know, unsanitized kind of feel about it that I can't, unfortunately, put my head at put my finger on, which is disappointing because this is a podcast and I should really be able to do that. But I don't know whether or not, Derek, that's something that you can expand upon.
I think I had the same sort of trouble you do, but I suppose it was the point you've made about they were on the edge, because the first episode, obviously, it was just Burnham's story, you know, and we were getting up to speed with her. And obviously, it's a case of having to survive in this new environment. And obviously, the big reveal is that there's no Federation anymore. And that was continued on in the second episode. Well, actually, it was continued on in the third episode, where we've got when we've finally got Burnham, who is interacting with the Discovery crew again. But she has said that, you know, she has changed. You know, the actual character has changed. But the reason why she's changed is that the world, the universe is more frightening now. You know, and all the way through this series, it is much more on the edge. There are more predators in places that that we thought would be civilized now, or were civilized at one time. So there was a loss of hope, as well as a case of being on the edge.
I think, Graham, what I think Derek is trying to say, and what I think I'm trying to say is that TOS, the Federation, is very much in the distance. Mm. It's very rarely referred to. later on in the series it gets more referred to, but in TNG and DS9 the Federation is there. It's very much it's very visible, and indeed in Discovery. Whereas in TOS it's not, and you have that beyond the final frontier thing, which is what they've done with Discovery.
Yeah, certainly. I wonder how much those early episodes of season three may have been influenced by Mandalorian, and I just wonder if there are things in that they seem to be that sort of gritty. You're on the outer rim now. Sort of feel to it, and I don't know if that is a deliberate thing or whether or not it's just like part of the cultural osmosis, and maybe that's something that was appealing to those earliest episodes. I know for me anyway, my mind was still on Picard mode, I think, when I got into it, when I started watching season three, so I think there was more of that getting back to like genuine Trek stuff, especially sort of TOS flavored stuff, really did sort of like help me get back into it. And I thought, oh yeah, this is more like the sort of stuff that I want to watch after, you know, the as we've already discussed on the podcast, the rather disappointing ending of Picard.
Let's talk about the burn. Let's talk about the concept, the idea of the burn. And let's also think about the origins of the burn. Obviously, we're skipping all the way to the end of the series. Derek, what was your assessment of the burn as a concept? And also, what do you think that they were trying to say as regards to the burn's origin and its cause, I should say?
You've got brand new series and you want to go all Andromeda. Oh, no, sorry. We don't want to go all Andromeda on this. But the idea is that starting anew and taking out such a pivotal structure as the Federation, you know, it seemed to be such a great idea. You know, it's sort of like you just bring things back to basics is what they've done. How they got to the burn, I have problems with. You know, obviously this is science fiction. It doesn't really matter what I think about sort of like the logic behind it, because it's, you know, but Star Trek is usually logical. I had problems right at the end with the protagonist Sukal. It's a nice idea, but you know, having one character who just basically has destroyed the whole galaxy, you know, because he had a, you know, had a bit of a crime fit. Well, actually, it was more than that, because I'm being very heartless here. But I just thought that was just a bit silly. And also, whenever you saw the flashbacks to when the burn happened, you had this picture, there was a sequence of all of these Federation ships all lumped in together, exploding. Why the hell were they all there together?
I would suggest to you that was symbolic. I don't think that actually happens. That's Graham. Let me ask you this. Do you think there's any kind of metaphor that can be drawn from a childlike orange-tinted skinned individual screaming into the night and causing a massive load of destruction? I mean, is there any metaphor that we can draw from there? Any parallels from modern life?
Yeah, I suppose you could point that as just being a massive hissy fit. But I was a bit sort of like nonplussed about the whole concept of what caused the burn. But then actually what I framed it in a sort of Star Trek way of saying, well, is this a Star Trek idea of someone just having an emotional outburst and it causing a massive tidal wave that goes through the whole galaxy and blows up every bit of dilithium? And I think in Star Trek, they've never been afraid of introducing godlike entities or people with powers that can reach across the entire galaxy at once. You look at Q, and that's like one of the favourite characters of the Next Gen, and pretty much redefined Star Trek. But
or Trelane,
who people have brought into the Q continuum, haven't they, in their own head canon and side. I'm sure there's lots of side canon where Trelane is part of the Q continuum.
There is literally a book that has been written on that. There's an original novel in which Trelane is sort of like brought into the Q continuum is a Q.
Yeah, and I can't remember the name of the episode now because I'm not that much into it, but there was the one where the Enterprise D goes to a planet that's all destroyed except for one farmhouse, And it's another one of these godlike entities who manages to wipe out an entire race from time, doesn't he?
That's not a good episode of Star Trek for my money. It's very, very slow, but, and I can't remember the name of it. But
there will be people who love it because of the sci-fi concept of it. And I think it's just part of that sort of tightrope that Star Trek sometimes walks, where you'll get people who are like deep sci-fi writers who will come up with a concept and not really care the science behind it. It's just the getting a concept out there that something could interact with matter emotionally, and that those emotions could have some kind of effect. And it's for something like Star Trek, it's actually quite helpful to have that element there, because it's all about emotions in Star Trek, and it's all about interactions of and humanity rather than the science behind it. Because if you start looking at the science behind it, you soon, it all begins to unravel anyway. So just go along with the ride. And I think as far as the burn is concerned, which I must say I haven't got my glasses on at the moment, and I've got the wiki page open up for season 3, and all I can read is the bum all over it. a bit of a side, it's a bit off-putting. He explains an event called the bum. Okay, right, let's not read anymore. Instantly you've got the burn turned up in the first episode, and it goes all the way through, and of course it gives you the arc that goes all the across all the episodes, and it's a nice easy explained arc as well, so you don't have to spend too much time on it, which I thought was really good for those first few episodes, because you recognize, okay, well, this is what they're going to try and find out what's happening. Then the chain gets introduced, and that, right, okay, they're the antagonists, okay, we can go with this. And I think when I said at the start of this that I really wanted more episodes, was I felt that they obviously felt that they had things to do in this series, and those things that they felt they had to do just occupied too much time, and what you end up having is these flabby episodes in the middle that really just sort of bridge the gap rather than the sort of strong opening we have. When I say flabby, I don't mean they were bad. I think it's that if anything, they were just ordinary. They were just, you know, good 3-star episodes. There weren't any real episodes that I think in this series that I thought, God, that stunk. That really did, and that's very rare that I can say that about an entire season of Star Trek.
I think for me, probably the one that I enjoyed the least was probably The Sanctuary. But I mean, that was still quite good, because I mean, I liked Asira, and I liked the animal chain. I liked the idea of it, but it didn't quite hang together for me. I was never quite entirely convinced by the animosity between Book and his brother. But I mean, this is small beer, I should point out. This was by no means a bad or unenjoyable episode. This is just merely things that I think
it was a Frakes episode, probably, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, he does like Frakes the People of Earth as well, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, that's true. It was a really good episode, that one.
I really enjoyed that one. And another one that I really enjoyed was Unification 3.
Yeah.
And I make no apologies for this horrific fan serving, world building, geeky academic version of A Mock Time, which I really enjoyed. And the other thing that I enjoyed about it all is it was a bottle episode.
Yeah.
And I think I just love bottle episodes. It was like watching a play. And I really, really enjoyed it.
Courtroom drama as well. I think Star Trek always does courtroom drama well.
They're so good at this kind of stuff. It's right up their alley. What a way to tell your fan base that you've taken the Vulcans, you've finally done it. You've taken the Vulcans and the Romulans and you've unified them, and you've actually done this. This is something that goes all the way back to Balance of Terror. And the format with which you choose to do it is through a bottle episode. Absolute. I love that. I love the audacity and the impudence of doing that. I really hope there are people whose piss is boiling because of that. I really do, because I don't think they understand Star Trek at all, because this is pure Star Trek for me. I absolutely, as a massive TOS fan, I would say that. Derek, take issue with what I've just said, please.
No, I can't. I mean, Unification I actually did enjoy as well. I do concur with Graham that there are fewer episodes really than I would like to have seen in this series. But that's mainly because there is so much packed into, there's quite a few episodes which they have a lot of information packed in. The early parts of the series, you know, the first four or five, they do pack a lot of character growth, you know, and character relationships. It actually does feel like a good ensemble piece as well. And obviously you have your stars of the episode, you know, whenever they do, like the first episode obviously is Burnham, the second episode is really Tilly and Saru's episode, you know, and you know, and you have it does feel like Star Trek, if you know, it is the best bits of Next Generation and the best bits of TOS that have come together. The majority of them, these episodes, I do really like. And I do agree with you. The Sanctuary I found is a bit of a problem. And also Scavengers, I thought was a bit of a bit of a baggy one as well, you know. But the rest of them I just really liked.
One area where it differs from the Roddenberry sort of vision and the Roddenberry idea of Trek is the idea of conflict within the main characters, which is something that as the show, the franchise grew, and as Roddenberry's influence over it waned until, you know, his passing, was something that he would never want to have. He would always say, look, we as human beings have made it. We've resolved our differences. We don't have arguments and disputes and disagreements and conflict between each other. It's all the drama is through the guest stars and through the other planets, the other world that we listen to. But that has, over time, that's changed, of course. But it was very apparent in this series, I think. You know, understand all these guys have come all the way 900 years into the future, and they've done it all basically for Michael, it should be said as well. And there's been genuine conflict in this season, isn't there, Graham? I'm thinking about Kayla and Paul, and I'm thinking about Michael and Paul as well, which was the thing right at the very end, which we know is going to presumably be a thing for next season as well. Can you talk to us a little bit about your feelings about the way that the ensemble worked between each other?
Yeah, well, I thought it worked really well, and it did bring across the fact that they have left everything behind to go into the future. I felt they were playing a little bit of catch up though, because a lot of the extended ensemble cast. I mean, one of the reasons why we actually quite like Discovery is the fact that they don't let the extended ensemble have too much screen time. So very much in the old TOS style, where although we're all familiar with characters like Sulu, they didn't really have that much to say, did they, in the original series? It's extended on into the future, but this is what we had with Discovery, and their very own Sulu, Detler, became a character in this season, when she's really just been there on the bridge pressing the purple buttons. And you almost felt that, well, you know, you can't make her a key character now, because you can't make us interested in what she's going through when we've really just been ignoring her for the last two seasons. And I think that the fact that with those characters who we suddenly have to sort of like form a get an attachment to, yeah, I mean, it becomes a bit more modern Star Trek with like DS9 or Next Gen, where you've got to be involved with all the characters and all the way that they interact. Now, the whole thing about Hugh and Paul and their relationship is quite dominant in this, especially when you add Adira into the mix and you've got the little family they've got there and the interactions of that happen. And now, of course, that's a little family within the families. So you've got that level of stratification in the way that the characters interact. And of course, you know, being a millennia away from their own version of Starfleet, then of course you need the links between the separate characters are going to frazzle and fray and disappear. So I think it was good, and I think it builds up to a good fourth season where you're going to see divisions within the crew, but it's all things that they could resolve in one or two episodes and then just completely forgot what happened.
I was going to say, Derek, I think it would be disappointing, in my opinion, if the what is clearly now going to be a rift between Michael and Paul is just I'd like to see it resolved because you'd like to see people that you love resolve their differences. But I mean, for the sake of drama, I don't want that to be an easy fix. What do you think?
Well, I agree with you. Well, I've come to like all of those characters, even though, as Graham said, that at the end of the season, Michael Byrne did start going into annoying mode. But I thought that she was very interesting at the beginning. And I really like Booker as well.
Yes, Book's great. Yeah, and so is his cat.
And he brings quite a lot of humanity. And also he does drop the old bollocks and the old, you're pissing me. He brings in a couple of, British colloquialisms, which is great.
Colourful metaphors.
He brings the British, which is what we want. We love a bit of that.
Yeah. But I do agree with you that sort of like you want to see some development with that storyline, and I hope they don't get rid of it in two episodes, which they probably will do.
I really hope they don't, because why did they drop it in? Because it wasn't, it was clearly a contrivance, bluntly. If you want to be really hypercritical, I enjoyed it. I think it's great, but it didn't have to go down the way that it went down. They resolved the situation. They did rescue Hugh and Adira. And Saru, for that matter. So, they all got it back together again. But I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to advance Michael's character as being, a self, single-minded, difficult person, and Paul's antagonism towards that. They could have done that in a different way, but they just said, no, we're going to create conflict between these two characters for next season. So we need to drop it in now so that it's hanging over. And this was a big moment. And they've done it now. So they've got to see it through. They have to see that through. Otherwise, they're kind of wasting people's time. Not that watching television is not actually an inherent waste of time anyway. But yeah, that's by the by.
The main problem I had with those last couple of episodes with annoying Burnham was the fact that Burnham had to be involved in every step of the fractured crew's recovery. So she had to be on Discovery helping the Tilly and her group. She had to be there with trying to beat the big bad enemy. And she also had to be there trying to save Saru and Hugh and Adira on the planet. And it was this sort of thing where I thought, well, okay, if you're going to extend it out to the wider group, let them sort it all out. Let those guys who are perfectly capable of getting out this really, really tricky situation, let them do it without you having to come in and be the one saving the day on everything. Not saving the day, but at least having some influence on saving the day. And I think that's what, I suppose, she is the hero of the show and she does get her pips at the end. But maybe that was asking us to believe too much about the character, I think.
You could probably bring in now with Burnham, now she's in charge. She can, if you want to have about this sort of the relationship with her and Paul, is that, now she's got her boyfriend in Book who can actually fly the Discovery. She doesn't need Paul anymore, so sod off. That's not going to happen. I know.
I mean, no, it's a good point because, of course, it might well be. And I'm sure I envisage a scene that will be written at probably halfway through season four in which Hugh basically tells Paul, in the way that Hugh seems to tell Paul things, that, this is part of your antagonism is the fact that you're no longer as important a component on the ship as you were because of Book. And I think that I can definitely see that scene happening. There's a couple of things I want to go through first before we wrap up. Let us talk about Adira a little bit because I think that is an interesting character. I don't think any of us are necessarily qualified to speak to the virtues or otherwise of the manner with which her character, a transgender character, I think the first transgender character in Star Trek is done. I don't know. I'm not certain I have the cultural sensitivities to be able to address it, but I thought that Blue Del Barrio is a superb actress, and I thought that she's a really interesting character. And I wonder whether or not, let's start with Derek this time, whether or not you have any views about the manner with which that relationship with Gray and indeed the family is done. Could you talk a bit more about that?
I like the character, and I like the way that she's been introduced, or, well, I mean, I say she, this is where it was done subtly. I didn't see that there wasn't any sort of like big sign saying up, this is what this is, you've got to believe, you know, and all this sort of stuff. There wasn't any virtue signaling that I spotted. I just saw it as a natural progression of a character, and that person's issues with losing someone. And I felt it was actually quite I just thought it grew on me. The character grew on me, and the end part of the characters forming a small, you know, small family was brilliant. I thought the way that worked was excellent, and that's why I liked the character of Paul and Hugh, the way they embraced, you know, the situation and how the humanity came out. And it was actually well done. It's probably one of the highlights of characterization, or the character story that went through that, you know, through the series. Actually, you know, it was gentle.
Cool. Yeah. No, I'm with you there with regards to Adair. I think that he was gentle, and I think that there's an interesting. I think there's interesting things about what they're going to do with Gray. I think next season is. I mean, it's very on the nose. I'd actually expect that the Star Trek sensibility, by the time we get, you know, that far ahead in the future, that transgender is that these matters of gender are not an issue. I thought that the only thing I'd say about those scenes is that they did bring you very much back into the present moment, and were directly speaking to the audience on matters that are relevant to this moment and probably not necessarily to that time. But that is not a criticism or a rebuke as far as I'm concerned. Graham, do you have any opinions on that?
Well, no, I'd echo that as well, because, I mean, that's what Star Trek's always done. It's not
indeed
trying to tell you what life is like in the 23rd century. It's trying to tell you what life is like now, and just using the 23rd century as a backdrop. If it went into that and trying to tell you what life's going to be like in the 23rd century in that way, then it would fail because we wouldn't recognise it. Or we shouldn't recognise it anyway. I thought it was well done, and I think obviously as well, because she is two entities. Of course, the personal pronoun they works anyway, doesn't it? So I'd never really got on with the Trill, I must admit. I think it's a nice concept for one episode, but the fact that they keep coming back is just, well, okay, if you insist. But yeah, I thought the episode they had of it in Next Gen, that was fine. And then, what do you mean you're getting a character in every week? Okay. Yeah, if you want to go down that path.
Blimey. Last year it was Riker, and this year it's Dax. Good grief. It's are there no limits? Are there any characters you like, Graham? Really? Do you even like this show?
Well, I can't remember the last time I watched an episode of DS9.
Fair enough. I think we should be going drawing to a close relatively soon, but there's two more issues I just want to address, and because we have to talk about, for me, we have to talk, and we could talk about the Mirror Universe episodes as well while we're doing that. Guys, I love Michelle Yeoh. I think she is a magnificent woman and actress. But I can never escape the feeling that the reason why they keep her on the show is because they feel bad about killing Captain Georgiou off in the first episode of season one. My feeling is that they've kept her around, but they've never really known quite what they're supposed to do with the character of Emperor Georgiou. And while I enjoyed certain aspects of the Terra Firma two-parter, in particular, I really loved the return of the Guardian of Forever, and I loved the characterization of it. I felt that whole episode was just an expedient way of getting rid of what is an extremely problematic character, both in universe and in real life as well. Graham discuss.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, she was great there in that first episode as a captain, and I thought, well, you know, if she's only here for this one episode, that's so brilliant. But of course, you know, you've got her there, and of course they want to try and bring her back in, and yeah, Mirror Universe, yeah, fun, but all those Mirror Universes are just episodes are just. You know, let's all just put on some leather, do a bit of S&M, and just act like dicks. Okay, great. You're now showing your range. Well done. But I don't like I don't like Trill. I don't like Next Gen. I don't know. That slipped out. I don't like Mirror Universe episodes. When Mirror comes around in the original series, it gives you a chance to see where things could have gone, and it stands as a lesson, and obviously it's the like a warning of fascism and about how close it goes to our own lives, and that's great. And every Mirror Universe episode that has ever ever followed it has done the same thing over and over and over and over again, and for no reason at all, other than just being some more fan service, and it's lazy fan service, and it's one of the reasons why I think the modern day Trek often fails me and often turns me off, and it turned me off again. And Giorgio coming back as evil Giorgio. I didn't like her as a character. I really didn't, and she's been hanging around like a bad smell on Discovery for ages. And which is a shame, because you're right, Michelle Yeoh is brilliant, but as that character, no, awful, really.
That's quite interesting, Graham, because I mean, I was waiting. We heard all of this these rumours about the Section 31 series coming out, that she would probably follow up, and when. Series three of this happened, you think, oh god, she's gone to the future, what how are they going to get rid of her now? And I thought that they actually did a very good job of getting rid of her. it tied it up nicely with me. Do you think, Graham, that you could watch an actual series that was around her if you have problems with her character? Because I do kind of agree with you, because I always wondered, why did she stay around? I mean, there is obviously the link between Burnham but it's still quite paper thin.
Yeah, I don't think I'd watch a Section 31 series anyway. I think
it doesn't have Section 31 now.
No, okay, yeah, but I probably not. If it's going to be entirely based on the Mirror Universe, I probably wouldn't watch it, because it isn't the sort of Star Trek I want to watch. Well, it's not Star Trek, is it?
No, it's not Star Trek. You're right. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but you know, but yeah, we're over that now. I did like the introduction of Carl, as you said, the Guardian Terry, you know, and actually I spotted it from the beginning, because when he came out and he was called Carl, I thought of Clarence from Clarence the Angel from
and he looks a lot like him as well, yeah.
Yeah, I thought of that too.
It was the same story, because the idea about she went off and had her life again. It's the same as the It's a Wonderful Life. And I thought, okay, this is the only one who could do this would be some entity. And I thought, it's the Guardian of Forever, especially because the planet looked a bit like, the empty planet. Well, all the Star Trek TSOS planets had hardly anything in them, really, when they were alien places. But I actually liked the character, and it was good that they interject that. And there were a couple of nice little Easter eggs throughout the series.
Yes, one of which, of course, was the USS Nog, which I only actually noticed the second time around of watching when they finally arrived at Federation headquarters, and when we saw the Starfleet, we saw the USS Nog, which I assume is an homage to the late Aaron Eisenberg, who sadly rather very prematurely passed away in 2019. So that was a nice touch. I loved the Garden of Forever. I like that being that there. I appreciate the It's a Wonderful Life homage that it was there as well. I can appreciate that on an artistic level. Giorgio is simply not a character I'm willing to forgive. She is a mass murderer. You know, she is a genocidal maniac. And then there, for me, there's no redemption for people like that. I don't believe we live in a world where we should consider or contemplate redemption for people who are like that. And that, but that's just me. And I know others feel differently about that, but that's my view. I think we're going to wrap up soon. So there's just, we'll just go back to the fire, go back, go forward to the final episode, and Admiral Vance's negotiations with Osira in the Emerald Chain. And the one of the conditions of the treaty, the proposed treaty, was that the Federation recognize capitalism, which I think is one of the most on the nose sort of like occasions for Star Trek to acknowledge that it doesn't operate under capitalist systems, and that maybe it's a socialist thing. So, Derek, this is the kind of question that I think that you would enjoy answering. So, I'm going to ask Graham instead. Graham, what do you think? Do you think that there was a time in Star Trek history where those capitalist pigs paid for their crimes, comrade?
Well, I think they obviously so. Obviously, that certainly happened. We never get into it too much, but about Khan's business deals. But I reckon that they were all put on the Botany Bay, weren't they?
Derek, what do you think? I mean, I mean, obviously, you and I are slightly somewhat different to Graham in that our political views are somewhat to the left, and I very much appreciated that scene. Did you find this the same significance as I did? I wonder.
Well, I was outraged. I was totally outraged. I thought that this is cultural Marxism at its worst.
woke Trek is what it is.
It was woke Trek. No, I thought it was funny. Because I thought I'm gonna get myself a T-shirt now, and it's just gonna say, and it's gonna have a nice little figure of a nice trimly trimmed beard and nice haircut, and it will say Admiral Vance is a comrade.
Badmore Vance, though. Come on.
Sorry?
Badmore Vance, come on.
Well, that was the problem. I was really, all the way throughout this, I was pleasantly surprised that he didn't turn out to be a Badmore, because he was such a jerk at the beginning.
See, I think that his decision to give Burnham the captaincy is a mistake. I think that's a Badmore move, personally. I'm not suggesting she doesn't deserve it, and I'm not saying it's a bad idea in terms of bringing the story forward. But I don't know whether or not actually in universe that's a good idea. Just going back to that whole exchange that she had with Osira, I thought was quite, again, this whole communism, this whole socialism, capitalism thing, was that, you know, for balance, it was, you had like the Emerald Chain, who are this flawed capitalist system, but they have all the nice things, whereas the Socialist Federation is making apples out of its own shit.
That's interesting.
I think that's very, very interesting what they did there, and I thought it was very, very clever. I thought actually I really enjoyed that exchange between the two, and also because Vance is a great character, and Osira I liked, but I can see why people didn't, and I get the whole Wicked Witch of the West references as well. I don't know whether you guys have got any more to add on that whole thing.
No, not
well,
really.
I was just going to say, I mean, yeah, the Wicked Witch of the West was the thing right at the beginning. I couldn't really deal with it, because it was just, she just acted that sort of the evil witch. Just, that was just her character. You know, there wasn't anything, until that episode when we had the negotiation, there wasn't anything else apart for her turning up and being a pirate. The other thing, I want to go back to what Graham said right at the beginning about how this series might have taken something from The Mandalorian. I've always had problems with Star Wars and the idea that, you know, people were living in societies where, you know, it does seem to be so exploitive, because you have, like in Star Wars, you have slaves. And the thing is that in this Star Trek, you have slaves on a mass industrial scale, you know, and the idea that people are basically being exploited terribly. And the idea that sort of like the Federation, which was a, you know, a beacon of light, has been pushed back into the corner. It seemed that we've gone into our science fiction, we've gone through, it looked like we were turning into that dystopian science fiction again, rather than Star Trek's always been quite a hopeful science fiction, you know, which went around the universe exploring places, obviously coming into conflict, but trying to come up with some resolutions. And it just felt like, you know, you're in this new universe, which is like the Star Wars universe, which seemed to be quite hopeless. But I'm glad that sort of, you know, we've visited this universe, and there does seem to be things are on the up again, you know. Mm. And I look forward to the fourth series. So,
yeah, that's the key. Yeah. The key take home, isn't it? Is looking forward to the fourth series, and I think that's I personally can't wait for it. But yeah, there are things that if it carries on the same way, analyzing things that are in the news right now, it wouldn't surprise me if there's going to be some way of the pandemic and the aftershocks of the pandemic will be things that they'll return to, or the post Trump world will be something that they allude to in the next series. I don't know, Terry, what do you think? Where do you think they're going to go? Do you think they're going to try and wheedle in tiny little snippets of the Kelvin universe in again?
I think there's a good possibility that we'll see some, because I mean we didn't really talk about it, but obviously there were some references to the Kelvin universe, particularly around Spock. So I think that there were some references to the Kelvin universe. So I think we'll see that. I think, sadly and tediously, the Klingons will almost certainly be back next season, but I really am sick of Klingons. I'm in the same way that I'm sick of the Borg, bluntly. I mean, I would like a significant break of new Trek from both of those bad guys. But I can't help but think there's going to be some kind of COVID allegory involving the Klingon Empire. I'm assuming the Klingon Empire has probably receded back to Kronos or something like that. And I wonder whether or not they've gone, ooh, maybe. But at the same time, you know, the effects of COVID are going to be with us for a long time. And in fact, coronavirus is not going away. It's with us. And I think that a degree of sensitivity is required when writing these kind of things, because for us, it's still a real thing and will continue to be a real thing for years to come. And so I think that I do feel quite strongly that when, as Derek says, Star Trek should offer some kind of beacon of light and hope. And I don't want to get necessarily too bogged down in our own societal hells. I like Star Trek to offer a way forward as much as it does analyze our problems. And so that's what I would like to see. And I would like to see the Ferengi come back as well, because I do like the Ferengi and we don't have enough of those guys. But yeah, I really enjoyed this one. I liked the way that it went. I liked the liberal use of Alexander Courage's fanfare as well. I thought that was really nice. And it was in general a nice, light, enjoyable series of Star Trek, and more power to it. All right then, well, I will have the last word then in that case. I'll say thank you very much indeed for listening, and we'll be back hopefully in a few weeks time. We'll try and do another one in a few weeks time, and then hopefully one happy day in a few months time we'll all be back together again recording an episode of Whom Pods Destroy and going down to White Leaf to watch the football. But until those days return, we endure. I hope you do too. And from Derek and from Graham and from myself, Terry, it's goodbye.
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 Any thoughts about what we should do for the next episode? Ooh. We should do a TOS episode.
Yeah.
Been a while since we've done one.
Yeah.
The other one that I thought of, and this is off the back of Reunification 3, was Court Martial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is a decent one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Is there any other ones that we can think of that draw on elements from Discovery 3? I don't know. I think the only other ones are the ones we've covered, really, like Mirror Mirror.
Squire of Gothos.
Squire of Gothos.
We literally name dropped Squire of Gothos.
We did, didn't we? Squire of Gothos. Yeah, that would be a good one, wouldn't it?
And it's an absolute cracker.
It is a stonking episode, yeah.
It's a cracking episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe we should do that then.
I mean, that's brilliant.
All right, then. Let's resolve to do that in February.
Yes.